Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to another edition of Nerdificent. I am one half of your host, Danny Fernandez. Sitting across from me, virtually still, is...
Ifeoluwa Wayne. How's everybody doing there in your homes? Hopefully 6 feet away from folks. Mask on. The opposite of the future song.
I recently got tested and was negative. And that just goes, even though I've been out protesting and whatnot the last couple of weeks, would like to say again, the importance of wearing a mask.
Yeah.
A lot of people are taking these masks off and it's crazy. And I just want to say, like, I still have been testing negative. I've been really careful. I know sometimes it's not always someone's fault, but a lot of people are acting. When we were protesting, there were people at brunch. Not even kidding. We walked by people at brunch in WeHo and I was just with their masks off, enjoying their Eggs Benedict.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, it was wild too, because when I went to the last protest, I took a Lyft there because, you know, I didn't want to drive and something pop off. I need to go and then I'm stuck trying to get my car. So I was like, let me just Lyft and then, you know, I know these streets. But I forgot, like, that all of that stuff is different now. So like the Lyft driver showed up and I was wearing my mask and then he was like, oh, and he put his mask on. I'm like, bro, okay, first of all, but I'm glad I did because we were talking or whatever. And then he just starts coughing recklessly. I'm like, whoo, glad you put your mask on. You were trying to have it off? You were trying to have this off? Nah, drop my ass off.
Also, that means he was coughing in his car the whole time before you got in.
A lot of cough particles. That's why I had my mask on. You had to cough. The people don't know these. And then you got the AC on, you know, cough particles everywhere. We're not talking about cough particles right now. We're talking about cartoons more specifically. We're talking about the Cartoon Network, baby. Talking about the Cartoon Network, baby.
I can see our guests laughing at this transition.
Always with the smooth segues. I always got the smooth.
We're not talking about the coronavirus. We're talking about the cartoon virus.
Yeah, yeah. The virus that is Cartoon Network, baby. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. It's a good time, but you know, we couldn't have be a conversation about Cartoon Network. One of our good friends who's a triple OG holding it down all over the Cartoon Network. Some would say he's taken over Cartoon Network.
Someone would say he is Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Mr. Cartoon Network. Like, you know, like Pitbull's Mr. 305 Live. This is Mr. Cartoon Network. how you doing, Jeff? Is Jeff Tramiel, baby.
Thank you guys for having me back. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without some dope cartoons to step to. Jeff, Mr. Cartoon Network Trammell, head writer of Craig of the Creek, sometimes voice actor on Craig of the Creek. Thank you guys for having me. This is
y'all were just nominated too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got nominated for Outstanding Children's Animated Series at the Daytime Emmys. So that's super cool.
Are they having the, like, how does that work?
I don't know. I think it's going to be like this on Zoom.
I would love it if like somebody loses and they just like end their Zoom. They just walk out and just their screen just goes to black.
Yeah, I don't need this anymore.
I want to know who my, like, if we get to go to the virtual Emmys, who my like box is going to be next to. Like, do I get to sit next to like Steve Harvey or somebody at the virtual Emmys or whatever?
That would that would be a nice box to be next to.
Oh my gosh, I want to see, because then it'll also be showing like people's homes. Yeah. I'm so nosy. I want to like see. You'd be surprised. Some people are like, messy or have wildness showing up.
Yeah, all that wildness and all that. Like, I totally see that. Like when they do SNL from home, you're like, oh, you could definitely tell who's been on SNL how long. some of them vets, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of space. Hold on, get here.
Some people just like, it's so funny because you can see I have a bunch of art behind me and stuff. Mm-hmm. We all do, actually. I can see in our places, but like the people that just have a blank wall.
Yeah.
That cracks me up too. It's just like this massively like plain. I'm like, wow, really artistic.
Yeah. I don't need nothing. I don't need nothing. Yeah. You see the big old light. See my ice cream dog right there. That's, I always try and get that in frame. We've been doing Zoom calls for Super Punch on TBS, another Ted Turner venture. And I'll Zoom call in, and I've just been putting different things in the background, and I have this giant Elizabeth plush from Gintama, and it was just sitting back there the whole episode. I'm like, well, you know, they didn't tell me to move it, so I'm gonna put it back there. So I'm gonna see how much wild stuff I can just fit behind me without them calling it out.
Jeff, we normally start our episodes with what we're geeking out about. Do you have anything, or artists or creators or shows or movies or books or anything that you're kind of geeking out about right now?
Okay, let's see. Been geeking out a lot about Static Shock, one of my favorite shows. I've been rewatching it. I talked about it on a podcast lately. I keep messaging Matthew Cherry about it on Twitter.
Inbox is full.
Yeah, it's just me being like, hey, can we do Static? Can we do Static? And he's like, I don't even own that. Why are you messaging me?
He and I were like talking about my pilot originally when I first sold it. And then when his Oscar happened, it suddenly was like, nope, his inbox is full. He's like doing other things with bigger people.
It's cool because he's a Craig fan, which is kind of nuts. So he's messaged me about Craig, which is really cool. But yeah, so I'm geeking out about Static, Always, Forever. I'm geeking out about Spy Family. It's a manga I'm reading that's super, super good. I highly recommend to anyone who likes manga. I don't want to spoil it, but...
Did you say Spy Family?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to pick that one up.
It's good. You should check it out. Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it. Just, I think you'll like it.
Ooh. Well, on that Static Shock, I have a whole, I should send it to you so you can see what I was thinking, but I had a whole treatment I sent because I met with this production company that did all of the, like at the time, the, like DC, like on DC, you know how they have their like platform, and I sent like this static treatment, but it was one thing that like, I was like, you have to meet with me if you do it, because there's one like, change I made. And I was like, I know what I'm talking about, because in the, you know, in the show, his father, you know, was alive and his mom passed and she was like a paramedic, and then his father was a cop. And then I wanted to flip it where his mom is alive and then the father's a cop, and then play with, you know, police brutality that way, instead of having like this cop on the show that's like, you know, I'm one of the good ones, right. Son. So, you know, it was just trying to get dark, and just so DC could be like, no, like we like all this except this. But yeah, that's tight. Me, you know, I'm geeking out about, you know, keeping the theme straight. Spider-Man Miles, you know, that was a super dope reveal. And what a roller coaster, because Sony opened their mouth and said that it was just a DLC and Insomniac had to be like, they had to stop that train because people were getting ready to light, they were going to light them up. They were going to light them up, and they had to be like, hold up, nope, That is not true. It is a full game. It is a full. So I'm super excited. Also, because, you know, by the looks on it, it's an older Miles, and I don't think we really got to see much older Miles. Like all the Miles have been him in high school. So I'm that's the fun I am, because there is like a fun in seeing teen Peter Parker and then adult Peter Parker. Yeah. So I'm so excited to see what adult Miles is, and I pray they have black people on the writing team of adult Miles.
Jeff, you're up.
I'm gonna use this as a sidebar for video game writing, because there's something that's been scratching at the back of my head since I've played it. But Life is Strange 2. Life is Strange is a really good narrative video game series, and Life is Strange 2 follows a half Mexican, half white kid whose dad is killed by the cops, and they're on the his dad is killed by a cop, and his son kills him and like accidentally kills the cop trying to protect his dad, and they go on the run. And the whole game, the way Life is Strange works, is you make a series of decisions, and like you get different endings based on how many quote unquote good or bad decisions you make, how many aggressive or passive ones you make. And I went through it totally 100% in with my own emotions, with my own views on racism, and in the end still like had good relationship stuff throughout. But in the end, I got the quote unquote bad ending, in the sense that because I wasn't passive whenever there was a racist situation. Like if someone was racist, they got clapped. Like just simple as that. And it wasn't even like I was just cavalierly killing people, but if they were being racist and putting my life at risk because of it, I chose the chance to defend myself and not do that. And in the end, you get the ending where like you go to Mexico, you make it, because the whole game you're coming from Seattle trying to go to Mexico because you know you have family down there. And in the end, if you do it that way, you make it to Mexico, but you're like these crime brothers who like are like the boss, and you're like the head of the crime thing. And then like the 100%, I watched all the endings, and the good ending is that the older brother ends up, you know, going to prison for that crime of accidentally killing the cop, coming out years later. And then the brother goes on a camping trip. He has like PTSD from being in prison and all the experiences they have. And then him and his little brother go separate ways. So technically the bad ending is the only ending where the brothers are together, but that's like the one that's the marketed quote unquote bad ending. And I was like, this is how you know it was written by white people, because the only good option is turning yourself in. Like you, it just shows you how you view the police completely differently for you to think, oh, that's the only way out, is because the major final choice you make at the end, this is spoilers if you haven't played, so go ahead, is you're at the border, and there's this like social worker who's been working with you, who's like, this is your last chance, you got to stop. And you choose to either ram through, or you get out the car and turn yourself in. And it's really cool because that it's not just two choices. If you were aggressive in all your choices, and I learned this and I'm glad I didn't pick, and you chose to turn yourself in based on my aggressive choices, he would have ran through and the older brother would have died. And then it would have been an ending where he kind of is in Mexico by himself holding it down. So like your choices, your actions also, you know, depend on how the outcome comes. But it still was like, this is whack. Like I was like, you made so many good points about how, like, they were making really good points about you. I think it was such a good game for people to like, you really can't do it, but you kind of give a short feeling of how racism feels and how it affects how you talk with people. And then in the end, they just drop the ball like that, where it's like, but you still should turn yourself into the cops. Also, sorry for taking the whole segment to have this combo.
Don't worry, I'm not geeking out about anything. I'll just like give a shout out actually to my friend Amanda Dibert, who she just wrote her first ever 140-page graphic novel, which is for DC Superhero Girls. It's called Weird Science, just like on our nerdy DC, which y'all kind of were mentioning. So y'all can pick that up for people of all ages, but definitely, you know, get it to the younger crowd so they can be a part of STEM with our superhero girls.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you. And sorry for blowing it. Something that's really been on my mind. I think I'm just going to do a thread where I actually just fully go into it, but
you should. Yeah. I mean, there's so many times when you, even on this podcast, have had the discussion of times when we can tell that there were no writers of color, writers specifically from that culture, because we just wouldn't do that. You know, even different cultures are separate. And so it's just like, you can tell. And what I was going to say is, when you said, I hope that there's writers on the game, I hope there's animators. Like, you know, Black and POC animators are so limited. Like, they're just not, they're there and they're not given the opportunities in the same way. I think even in the studios that I've been involved with, it seems like you have to prove yourself. I mean, this is, we say this all the time, but literally stories of people who were like lead storyboard artists for huge movies, not being allowed to direct. Like, that's typically the next step. Like, just being told that they didn't pay their dues, even though they've been there for a decade. Oh, yeah. It's something all of us, I think, could vent about forever, but it's insane. The hoops and obstacles even to be an animator on these properties. So again, you'll see a Black or brown character, but then you look at the animators and they're all white. So
yeah,
it's a mess.
I mean, the one thing I'll say about it is you can tell just how much diversity is needed when you when you hop into a create a character. And you stuck with you know, cornrows or afro, you know, no fade.
Afro looks terrible.
You know, it's always like, you know, straight up Ludacris and Too Fast, Too Furious levels.
Like, I wanted to say, not all Latinas have huge boobs either. This is every video game. Some of us are just a B+, and that's okay. Some of us have thickness in other areas, which are our thighs and our booty, and not just up top. Some of us can have both, but not all of us. Okay. Representation matters. Yeah. So Ted Turner, which if you were referencing, and I feel like is a really popular, famous name, is he actually got his company from his dad, who left him. He unfortunately committed suicide, and Ted was left like trying to take over this company, which was really fascinating because he ended up taking a lot of risks. So Ted actually sold off radio stations and bought a TV station. He bought WJRJ in Atlanta, which eventually became WTBS, which had old movies, sports, and cartoons. So Ted ended up launching CNN, and it was a 24-hour news channel. And that was wild to people. At the time, people were like, why would we need to watch the news 24/7? But that formula for CNN ended up lending itself to Cartoon Network, which became a 24-hour cartoon channel. So when Ted bought MGM, I mean, he was just taking over. He got all of their cartoons. And then when he bought all the WB movies, he got all the cartoons from Warner Brothers. So that was like Bugs Bunny, all of the Looney Tunes. So you can understand why he would need, those are hundreds of cartoons, right? Hundreds of titles. And so that's why he was like, I need my own channel that just airs all of this property that I have. So a little bit more of the backstory. In 1991, he purchased Hanna-Barbera. And then that was it, right? It was that they have Scooby-Doo, they have Yogi Bear, they have the Flintstones, Jetsons. I mean, it's like all those old vintage cartoons. So this man was like the mastermind behind. And I watched an interview with him where he said adults watch cartoons too, because that was not commonly thought of several decades ago. And he said more people watch cartoons at night than CNN. So that is something he realized and was like, I'm going to need a channel that fully shows all the properties that I bought, all this money I put in. So that is the story of how Ted Turner started Cartoon Network.
Wow.
Wow. Thank you, Uncle Ted.
Yeah. Came through. He was like, we getting these tunes out. So to get into Cartoon Network, the banger bar that Dani totally missed when she was like the CNN news.
Oh, what did I do?
Network. And then he was able to start a 24-hour cartoon channel. I was like, yeah. Cartoon Network.
But that's because I was saving it for you, Iffy, you on October 1st, 1992, which I know that you love finding out how long since you were born.
I mean, we don't have to get into that. But that is 4 years after me and Dani were born in October 1st, 1992. The Cartoon Network launched the finale of Tartakovsky's, launched the finale of Tartakovsky's 1812 Overture with the backdrop of cartoon explosions, followed by a special event called Droopy's Guide to the Cartoon Network, hosted by the MGM cartoon character Droopy, during which the first cartoon on the network, Rhapsody Rabbit, was shown. So that was real nice. Then the late night black and white showed early black and white cartoons, mostly from the Fleischer Studios and Walter Lantz, like Woody the Woodpecker from the 1930s and Merry Melodies and, you know, the classics. And then Toon Heads would show three shorts with a similar theme and provide trivia about the cartoons. There was also an afternoon cartoon block called High Noon Tunes, which was hosted by cowboy hand puppets, an example of the like simplicity and imagination of the network in its early years. And the majority of the classic animation that was shown on Cartoon Network no longer airs on a regular basis, but Tom and Jerry and Looney Tunes still aired and lasted until 2017. So it was running the classic tunes while they're developing some new heat.
Yeah, so because Turner owned so many other channels, they could promote Cartoon Network on the other channels. Remember, they were going against Nicktoons. So Nicktoons, which we did our episode on, was heavily realizing this formula of having kind of weird experimental, especially if you look at early Nicktoons, they really allowed their creators to be weird and gross, which is something that kind of came back but went away for about a decade. So they were starting to, with a lot of the Cartoon Network commercials, they would add this weird, awkward, like modern spin on the vintage cartoons. Mm-hmm. And their first original show, actually, so not just the vintage cartoons, their first original show was the Moxie Show, but it wasn't really popular. Okay. So what a lot of people consider their first big show, April 15th, 1994, Space Ghost Coast to Coast. It was a talk show of the Hanna-Barbera superhero. It was one of their most original programming ideas and really made them stand out. Like that set the tone then for the rest of the channel. It was there's something cool and funny and adult over here. But did y'all watch Space Ghost?
Oh yeah. I was big into Space Ghost. The Brack was really funny. Just what they turned into and it was, you know, I think my first introduction to like, you know, bits and knowing like when characters, you know, when just the idea of like, you know, what each character is going to do, how they're going to react. And it was just so funny, this concept that they really kind of, I feel like, focused on the reality of like, what would it be like if this character was making this late night show with his enemies. And it was just my favorite one.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Space Ghost a little bit later because I'm just slightly younger than you guys. I was four in 1994, so I wasn't allowed to watch Space Ghost, despite my protests. No, but I do remember eventually watching Space Ghost. And one of the things that is really interesting about it is they would premiere other shows on there that would later become Cartoon Network shows. Yeah. The first time we see the Powerpuff Girls is on Space Ghost. Which is kind of crazy. And they had a different title that I don't think I can say on this program because it's not PG. But, you know, like Space Ghost is also like such a weird show that really does change the kind of tone of Cartoon Network going forward, because it's so, what if we took this old property and just made him a talk show host? It's the weirdest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But also like so many people who worked on that would go on to work on other things on CNN that we're going to get into, I'm assuming. But so I don't want to like spoil anything, but you know, Aqua Teen Hunger Force fans and so on, this kind of all starts here.
Yeah.
Oh, so great.
I know.
Speaking of getting into, we have to take a really quick break. And then we are going to hop down nostalgia lane. I'm so excited talking about those huge properties that the cartoon time of Cartoon Network right after this.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
And we're back. We're walking. I wanted to say something, Jeff. I also couldn't watch Space Ghost in 1994. What the heck? Like, that was like when Lion King came out. I was like barely allowed to watch Lion King. We're not like in our 50s. Even if are a listener in your 50s, hi, hello, we love you.
I know. What's so funny is that's kind of the nugget that was dropped here, just kind of watching it. Is Space Ghost was a Cartoon Network show originally, but I think most people attribute it to Adult Swim because Adult Swim started re-airing it. I think that's when I got into it. Because it ran till 1999. I could see myself like 99, the end kind of era is probably when I kind of came in, but I didn't know it was running that long. I'm actually really surprised because to me, well, technically it kind of was. I always felt Cartoon Network was around my whole life. I didn't realize it started kind of not that long ago. You know, I'm older than Cartoon Network. And if you would have asked me that before this episode, I would have been like, no, it's been around just like Nickelodeon. But no, no, Cartoon Network was like, nah, we got this.
I didn't really watch it till the aughts. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I watched DBZ until like 2000 or something. No. Like, I don't, because I was watching like Rugrats and stuff. Like, I was still too young, I think, to watch some of the stuff on this. Also depends on when you got cable.
it's also very interesting too how you had it challenge the medium, because you know we never really talked about how our kind of relationship with Cartoon Network, but I definitely know that Cartoon Network always had a different voice to me than Nickelodeon for the longest. And Nickelodeon, I was really watching just their live action shows. I wasn't really messing with their cartoons like your Alex Mack, your All That. Like, that's what I was really getting from Nickelodeon. And then Cartoon Network was where I wanted the cartoons like Dexter's Lab and Powerpuff Girls. And it really, they were kind of the, for lack of a better word, the edgier of the cartoon giants. But then I think there's somewhere along the line, Nickelodeon kind of figured it out, and that's when you had them making things like Adventure Time, which that's a Nickelodeon.
That's Cartoon Network. Cartoon Network.
Okay, which one is there's one that's very similar. What am I thinking of? Let me see.
You know, what's interesting is that Nickelodeon produced the pilot for Adventure Time.
That's
and then decided not to keep it, and then Cartoon Network bought it, and they did it, and it blew up.
I will say, as I'm friends with a lot of animators, and Nickelodeon has taken a lot of L's like that. Loud House is definitely like a show that definitely has a Cartoon Network vibe, even almost style, you know. A Zim, which I would have totally believed was a if you would have told me that was a Nickelodeon show. But like their shows that I kind of definitely was like, that's a Nick show, is like a Fairly Odd Parent, where it's still like trying to like really leaning on the family wholesomeness and all this, where Cartoon Network's kind of like it almost in the voice, it almost feels like it's our voice, even though, you know, we know it's adults doing it, but they're like, we, you know, they, we're gonna do some wild things, you know. It's it's yeah.
To me, on the spectrum, you have Disney on the right. You have this isn't political. I'm just saying, you have Disney on the right. You have Nick in the middle, and you have Cartoon Network on the other side.
I would totally agree with that.
From being weird and allowing, so Invader Zim is another one where they took an L because they canceled it.
Yeah,
they wouldn't let him do what he, I think we covered that in our Nicktoons, but he was like, if you're not going to let me do, and brilliant, very funny show. If you're not going to let me make my show the way I want, then I'm just not going to give you my show at all.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. Especially, you know, it's because, you know, we, like Zim was already kind of pushing that edge of what a Nick show can do. And I think that's, they're like, no, we got to. But also, it's funny knowing that this is also the same company that did things like Rocko's Modern Life and Ren and Stimpy. And then somewhere they just took a full 180 and just like, we're not going to do that type of weird stuff anymore.
I think until we got to see, and I think this is maybe possibly taking from the early Ren and Stimpy slash how successful Cartoon Network was SpongeBob. SpongeBob brought back that intense, close animated shots that are really disgusting and like being weird and gross and having bad breath and boogers and all of that. But you're right. You definitely see more of that on Cartoon Network, which is kind of funny because it's like, that's kids' humor. Like they're gross and they're weird and they find like dead animals and stuff. And so let's hop into the big ones that we grew up with.
Yeah.
In 1995, we had What a Cartoon, which feels so old. That sounds so old coming out of my mouth, but it was essentially, it gave a lot of artistic freedom for animators and creators. It was shorts, actually. It was a segment of shorts that would be featured on Cartoon Network to kind of gauge how good they did and if they could be shows on their own.
Yeah.
So that's where we had Dexter's Laboratory, we had Powerpuff Girls, we had Johnny Bravo, we had Courage the Cowardly Dog. These all were shorts. They actually, if you have to send this to you, had an early version of Family Guy.
Oh, really?
Not even kidding. It's a bald Peter who's older. It's voiced by Seth MacFarlane, and he's like picking up a dog at the pound who's Brian. It's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, so apparently they passed on that, which also like isn't entirely their brand. Definitely feels more like where it landed, Fox and The Simpsons and whatnot. But
No, can't even believe, you know, like what a different show that would have been if it was on Cartoon Network. You know, like it just would be a whole different beast.
I was about to say, Quagmire. I was like, we definitely don't need Quagmire on Cartoon Network, but then we have Johnny Bravo, so I'm just going to shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, Seth actually worked on Johnny Bravo, I believe.
Okay. Well, Seth.
90s, so it makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense. But Jeff, out of those like ones that I named, were there ones that were like that you really latched on to? We also ended up having after that Ed, Ed, and Eddie, and you know.
My big one was, I loved Johnny Bravo. I love Powerpuff. My big one was Dexter. I'm actually wearing a Dexter shirt right now.
Love it.
Like that was the show that, the one show I kind of would like really make sure to like jump over to Cartoon Network to watch, because I was watching a lot of Kenan and Kel and other stuff on Nickelodeon. And I remember like Dexter used to premiere at like 7 o'clock on Fridays.
Yeah.
And I remember like watching it with my dad. There's like a musical episode where they it's kind of Michael Jackson inspired. Yeah. But like that was my show because it, I don't know, this, the humor really like stood up to me, and I watched it on HBO Max recently and I was like, oh, this is still very funny, you know, like,
oh yeah,
very simplistic of like, this is Dexter, he's making something, his sister breaks it, rinse, repeat, you know, over and over, but it's still like super interesting and funny.
Yeah, I think that's what made Dexter such a hit was the layers to it, because you had the layer of like, he's this mad scientist making things, but you had that like very simple, easy to understand kid level thing of always feeling like your siblings are getting in the way and messing your stuff up. Mm-hmm. I remember I used to love like that relationship because Dee Dee reminded me of my sister, where it's like, yeah, you always mess my stuff up, you know, when you break my stuff. And it was just fun to see him just, you know, just try these new things, and they just always push the boundaries of like what his tricks would do. And it was a solid opening for Cartoon Network because I was definitely watching that. I love Johnny Bravo. That was like the first person character I tried to like impersonate with the voice. Like I was so sure I did a good Johnny Bravo. Like I told all my friends, and all I would say is Johnny Bravo here. That's all I would say. But I was like, I said, wow. I just like, yeah,
that was perfect though.
Yeah.
Whoa, was Johnny Bravo in here?
Yeah.
For me, it was my girls, the Powerpuff Girls, Mojo Jojo. I mean, like, I was just him, which mm-hmm. I saw someone cosplaying as. I just loved the concept of this show. Also combined kind of like that anime style for those of us that were, you know, getting into anime at the time. And I think also just having these three girls that were so different, I definitely felt like I was Buttercup. Like if he knows this about me, I'm very type A. So I was like, mm-hmm. she's the leader. She's the type A. She's like, you know, they also had different monsters every week. Like that to me is really, even just looking from an animated standpoint, I loved all the colors. Like I just, it was such a, for me, it just embodied who I was at that time in yeah. elementary school to middle school. And so that was like one of my favorite, and just seeing girls beat up people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was and, great. And
yeah, it was a solid show. And this was Craig McCracken, who who like before that worked on Two Stupid Dogs, Space Ghost Coast to Coast. He had an appearance as himself. You know, he was on, you know, What a Cartoon, obviously on Dexter's Lab. So he was kind of like, you know, one of Cartoon Network's guys. And he went on to EP, regular show, writer, storyboard artist for Chowder. And his next kind of big thing after that, which I remember being great, was Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Mm-hmm. So Craig, you know, definitely one of those folks who was knocking it out of the park. I was, you know, he also EP'd the pilot of a regular show as well. So mm-hmm. that was McCracken.
So that was 1995, and we had all of those Dexter and Powerpuff Girls and whatnot. And in 1997, we had a spaceship, mm-hmm. we had a robot named Tom,
mm-hmm.
and we had 5 hours mm-hmm. of anime programming.
Mm-hmm. I don't even want to go too long into this because this is going to have to be its whole own episode.
You're right. Toonami, this will be its own episode.
Toonami launched, and that was pretty much, I think, that brought the everyone to Cartoon Network. Like it was through the power of weebiness that we had everyone there, because that's how I kind of caught on to some shows that maybe weren't on my radar. Was you get to Toonami a little earlier and you're like, oh, what's this thing going on? Like if you were paired as the opener for Toonami, you're in for some good traffic, because you didn't because Toonami was such an event that even the interstitial stuff you wanted to see, like all the like back and forth with Tom and seeing what mm-hmm. he has to say. So you were there early. So if you were a pre-Toonami show, you definitely had eyes on you.
We had, so Jeff, I don't know what you, I know everyone knows what my favorite thing in Toonami is, but we had Sailor Moon, DBZ, mm-hmm. Voltron, Reboot, also ended up having Gundam Wing, I'm sure, Tenchi Muyo later. Was there a specific anime that you were tuning into for Toonami?
What's Toonami? No, I'm kidding. I loved Reboot. Reboot was my big show. That was the first one I really got into. But I think we all know where this is going, and it's Dragon Ball Z. I have an interesting thing with Dragon Ball Z where my friend was trying to get me to watch it forever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have no interest. And the episode I finally watched is, in hindsight, probably the least interesting episode of the series. It's when they're on the way to Namek and they run into that ship, Krillin and Bulma and Gohan.
Is this when she's in her panties?
No, it's not that one, because that would be hilarious. They run into the ship of like, it's like little boys. It's kind of like a Robin, or not Robin, like a Peter Pan situation in space. Yeah. And I think they're trying to like take, Sea Fighter team's ship. And I was just enamored because I had never seen anything like it, you know? And little did I didn't even know who Gohan was, who Goku was. My first introduction to the show is Gohan and Krillin. So, I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't seen that episode, if I'd be like some giant nerd who doesn't know about Dragon Ball Z, and that would be sacrilegious.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, well, one thing I want to go back and correct, which I totally did forget about, was we saw Tom in 1999. When it launched in 1997, we had Space Ghost villain Moltar running the ship. It was him first, you know, pulling on the ones and twos to drop these cartoons for us. And I do remember that. But it was such a small piece of time, because you don't think of Toonami without thinking Tom, but I do want to put a little respect on Moltar for pulling them levers to get us these animes right right up top, you know, because it was good.
I didn't join, I think, until Tom was there.
Yeah. Yeah, because when like 997, it launched with Thundercats cartoon Roulette, which had like different old school cartoons mixed in, Voltron and Johnny Quest. So, next year is when it went full anime. So the first year was a wash. I probably didn't even watch that. The second year, 1998, is 10 years. We are 10 years old at this point, Danny, is when we jumped over and we had Robotech, Beast Wars, Transformers, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball Z, and Super Friends. And that is that. Now that is a lineup. That is an unbeatable lineup. And then 1999, we add in Reboot, Ronin Warriors, and Powerpuff Girls. And then 2000, one of the most, I feel like, slept on, because I just, for some reason, this anime is just, the design, the idea of it was always tight. G-Force, Guardians of Space, Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, Batman Animated Series, Tenchi Muyo, Tenchi Universe, Tenchi in Tokyo, Blue Submarine Tenchi 6.
Tenchi was taken over.
Yeah, this was the era where there was way too many Tenchi shows. I remember this. I was like, why are there so many Tenchi shows? Because like one was like an actual samurai anime, and then there was one that it felt like it was all about the girls being horny for him. Like I don't know which one, but it was wild.
Which one did you like more, Ivy?
Everyone knows. But it's so funny because looking at these lineups, I remember getting them all. And it's so funny because we talk about this a ton of times with Dragon Ball Z, the ever looping, never being able to finish it. Because in 2001 is when they showed Dragon Ball after they ran Dragon Ball Z. So they showed Dragon Ball after Dragon Ball Z. But this, I think, this is the one. This is the year. 2001, you had Outlaw Star, Big O, Cardcaptor Sakura, Mobile Suit Gundam, the 8th MS Team, and War in the Pocket, Zoids, Batman Beyond, and Dragon Ball. That might be one of the hardest years. We might have to do a poll and see which one everyone, like, if only the show's listed, what's the year you're taking? Because this really does feel like one of those house memes. because it's great, and it's truly, we got to keep going because I'll get lost in Toonami. That was an era. That is the foundations of, I would say, the foundations of the career I sit on right now. You know?
Same. That gave me my nerd cred, I feel like.
It's so
all that anime.
It, yeah, I, 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 push everyone to go through and look at those lineups, because it was like I was going back into my couch every time I was reading these names, because some you're even forgetting. You're like, oh yeah, I was watching that on Toonami. Oh, whew, I love being a nerd.
We have to take a really quick break, but then next up, we got, when he was talking about how a lot of adults watching these cartoons, we're going to talk about Adult Swim right after this.
Yeah.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
And we're back, so we're hopping forward a little bit to 2001 Sundays at 10 p.m. We have Adult Swim. Now, if y'all remember the commercials for this, do you remember it was like a bunch of elderly people like hopping into the pool and whatnot? So this was mature content for older audiences.
Which if you're a kid, there's no way you're turning the channel.
Yeah, right?
No
way. They knew what they were doing.
No way you're turning the channel. If you, it was the perfect marketing, because you're going to sit there, a bunch of kids, and be like, all right, y'all got to turn now, because this is about to be for the adults. And you are like, the hell I am.
they had reruns, anime, more anime that we couldn't technically watch on Toonami, a lot of sketch comedy, and it kind of created its own brand, which still holds up today. Like, I think Adult Swim is considered, you know, when I think of the Adult Swim exhibit at Comic-Con every year, it's like kind of, although it's a part of Cartoon Network, it definitely is its own brand and own style.
Yeah.
Jeff, so do you remember like some of the original thing? Were you watching Adult Swim at this time at 2001? Were you allowed to? Were you watching it?
I was the mature age of 11 and I was ready to watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah.
I think Family Guy. Family Guy wasn't there yet. But I know I was watching Aqua Teens. I think Baby Blues was on the first season. A lot of weird shows.
Do they have home movies?
Home movies for sure.
Home movies. Yep. We thought that was so gross and weird. My brothers and I would watch that.
I was very off put by the style of home movies because I was so used to like, so is this a cartoon? What is this?
Squiggle Vision.
Yeah.
Dr. Katz coming at you.
I appreciate
Dr. Katz.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you're the one thing that always stands out to me about home movies is, I forgot the little scruffy kid's name, but he was like, my mom says I have cradle cap, and he like opens up. Do you remember that scene? Yes. Every kid, people at home are listening to this, like, I remember that. He opened up his like hair and you can see it like on his scalp.
Yes, it's Jason, I think is his name.
And that is what stands out for me about home movies.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Adult Swim is interesting, and this is another thing that would probably get its own episode, but because it was interesting seeing Adult Swim fall into its voice, because it really definitely, even from the beginning, you could tell they slowly started like having those bumps where they would say little snarky things, and then they just went to the all black, and I was like, oh, what's this all about? And then they're just having a combo with the audience leading into things, and it was almost like, in a weird way, they just kind of took the Toonami formula, and they're like, oh, we'll just kind of like between bumps talk to the audience before we jump into stuff, but make it more adult snark humor. And and it seems like they really knocked it out the park, because people really just was vibing with it. And then they started adding like Flying Lotus and it adds music in the back. It was, whew. Yeah, Adult Swim really grew into it's always cool to see something find its voice and then like stick with it. And it was, and they were holding it down. You know, you had Adult Swim. They were kind of they eventually slowly started taking the brunt of Toonami up until Toonami was running like up until like 2008, and then it was on Adult Swim, and they had the anime block and that, and then in 2012 they brought Toonami back. So they're going hard with this. It's so funny because like I feel the big O too. Oh yeah, the weird second series. I always had like all the stuff they're showing on the new Toonami. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm watching it on your Crunchyroll and all that stuff, because it's so funny that anime is so accessible now. I mean, there's still nothing like watching it for free if your parents have cable or if you're underage and can't have a million streaming apps, but it is like cool to see like just what is kind of blowing up. And it seems like the smart thing that Toonami is still doing is really knocking out those like shonen anime that are popping, because all these, you know, Fire Force, you know, you got My Hero, Demon Slayer, JoJo. Like, those are the ones everyone's talking about anyway. So the kids are still in on it. Kids are still in on the conversation.
I think, too, just getting to see, because we know some of those voice actors, at least for the English dub.
Yeah.
So I think just getting to see them in the stylized Cartoon Network / Toonami commercials, which were always super famous. One of my favorites that I think everyone remembers from Toonami was when they were Future Trunks, when they were advertising Future Trunks, and it's him slashing through the screen. And so even now with One Punch Man or Dragon Ball Super, when they had it on there, I don't know if it's still on there replaying, although I wouldn't doubt it, is it's funny to get to have that, like those quick cuts of like a very popular Toonami, like the style of Toonami commercials that they would do to promote.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to bring up is in 2006, Cartoon Network actually had its first live action movie, which was reanimated. It was very much in the style, I don't know if you saw this, Iffy or Jeff, but it was in the style of Who Framed Roger Rabbit-ish, where it's like live action and the cartoons. It ended up turning into a show, which was called Jimmy's Head Show. Oh, Out of Jimmy's Head. Yeah. But yeah, it was kind of controversial because they started to go in that direction of having more, which we still see kind of on Adult Swim and stuff, is having humans. Yeah. And I think that was kind of upsetting for some people that were just like, no, this is cartoons only.
Yeah.
But you even had that on Space Ghost. There would be human guests.
Good point.
But I think a lot of people were scared that this was going to turn into like what Nickelodeon is or Disney, which is half and half. I think a lot of people didn't want that to happen.
Yeah,
so
I remember now looking at it. Yeah, I don't totally remember reanimated and Out of Jimmy's Head. Yeah, and it was, people were like, oh, it's a Cartoon Network. I was like, yeah, but it's still cartoon adjacent in their defense. And this is like well after 2004 when they kind of rebranded and had their Originals Only thing going on. And that's when you had Megas XLR, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and Hi-Hi, Puffy, Ami, Yumi, who I had the biggest crush on. I was all in. I was ready to go. I was like, take me to Tokyo. I'm about to go out there and meet them. I was deep in. And Puffy Amiyumi was this Japanese pop rock duo. And it was that perfect that style of where they're like, okay, we kind of have the little street style, but also we're like fun. And they were just like super, super big. And then they had a show and in the US that kind of really, we were like, okay, who are these? And then we kind of knew them as the people who did the intro to Teen Titans. And yeah, we're like, okay, well, y'all did that. We messing with you. We messing because that intro did slap.
I would be remiss / also not wanting to get hate mail if we don't bring up Samurai Jack.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Don't put some respect on Samurai Jack.
Oh, yeah.
I think all of us watched it. You know, that animation mm-hmm. style, classic animation style, so recognizable.
Oh, yeah.
Also wanted to give a shout out to Billy and Mandy. A lot yes. of people rep Billy and Mandy.
Yeah.
But now, Jeff, we're kind of approaching the current present day Cartoon Network, mm-hmm. which we have Craig of the Creek, which we mm-hmm. said is nominated for an Emmy. mm-hmm. How do you feel? I mean, I feel like y'all have been groundbreaking, like literally groundbreaking at this channel, but also in animation. Do you feel like there is a lot of pressure on the show to, you know, I'm curious, like as a creator and being groundbreaking, what that means as far as artistic freedom for Craig of the Creek?
I think there's a lot of pressure in the sense of wanting to do things that need to be done and doing them correctly, you know, like, because we're following like Steven Universe and Clarence and a lot of other shows that we're able to like really inform and really, I think help like just, you know, show people like that people are different and who people love are different or people's skin color is different. And, you know, like these are characters you can like and empathize with and see yourself in. And I know that's something that we really wanted to do on Craig just from day one. I think we've done a fine job so far of just really like trying to make things as diverse as we can, but we're always pushing that envelope. We're always trying to make sure that like people are addressing characters the way they should be. You know, if somebody is non-binary or addressing them by the proper pronouns and stuff, because that stuff's super important. And it's super important to instill that into kids now. Like, you know, I think that the better we are at like really hitting those things and really showing that like there's going to be different types of people that you're going to encounter and they are no less valid than anyone else. Everyone is in this together. All these kids play harmoniously and all these kids appreciate each other and love each other. And that's something that so many people need to do. So I guess there's a pressure in it, but I think it's the societal pressure that everyone has. I think that, you know, I'm not under any more pressure than you or if you're anyone else. It's just, we want to make sure that we have this platform and we're using it properly. And I think that's one of the ways we can do it. There's a lot of eyes on the show and
yeah.
I just want to make sure that we're getting the best message out that we can.
Yeah. I think of my friend Lalo, who does the Casa Grandes over on, which is a spinoff of Loud House. Mm-hmm. This Chicano family, for me, it's just kind of, I think, pressure in like, if this doesn't do well, like, when will we get this again? Yeah. You know, it's kind of like what we were talking about. Like, we just don't get to really have a lot of animators and creators of color that are getting to as many risks. So I guess it is cool that it's at Cartoon Network because it does feel like a channel that has dived 100% into risks. Like, and I think that is why a lot of these are so successful, is because they let their creators take big swings. And a lot of those pay off. But are there, speaking as the head writer, mm-hmm. when you're writing, are there shows that have influenced your style?
Yeah, I mean, taking it back to something I brought up earlier was Static Shock. That was a very important show to me for so many reasons as a kid, but also like they pushed the envelope a lot and they did things about race and they did things about like gun violence and so many things that we're still dealing with today, which it seems kind of taboo to bring up in cartoons for kids now. Mm-hmm. And they were doing it, you know, 20 years ago. And I know that stuff really affected me and it helped me learn. And I think that when we get the opportunity to kind of teach kids that, that's something that we need to do. So, that's been a big influence for me, also in the sense of like seeing a black lead. That wasn't a thing I saw a lot. It was always like, you're the sidekick, you're the Gerald, you're the nerd, you're the whatever, you know, like, and that was something really important to us when doing Craig, is like, Craig is the lead and he's not just the nerd or the athlete or the, you know, what, he's just a kid and everybody can just be a kid. You don't have to have all these like, you know, different pressures on you. So that's, for us, that's like the big thing that we're thinking of. That's the big thing that I'm always thinking of going into these stories. It's just, how can we make sure that like this show needs to speak to everyone? And yes, it needs to speak to black people. And yes, it does, I think, and we should feel represented, but it also needs to speak to everyone. So they know that, you know, we're all just people, you know?
Yeah. I feel that. Ooh,
I have a couple more questions, unless you have some questions, Iffy.
No, you can go ask away.
Well, as far as creators breaking into this space, there's no one way to do it. I know we all have like stumbled into, not stumbled, but like have different avenues that we have created for ourselves in order to get to where we are. Is there any advice that you give to young creators that are like listening? I feel like we have a lot of people that are trying to come up in the industry right now that listen to Iffy and I's show. I don't know if there's any advice that you could give them.
Oh man.
Even just basic.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because like you said, there's so many different ways. I think, you know, the basic answer is always like practice and write and practice your craft. And I think that's important, but a lot of it is experiences, you know, like a lot of times your experiences reflect your writing or reflect your art style. And it's very easy to fall into a rut. I know for me, especially in working on stories, it's very easy to like come to it from, I have this background and this is how I'd approach it. And sometimes you need those different experiences to fully realize things. You have to be open. You have to talk to people. You can't just assume that like, hey, I'm going to write this story and there's going to be this Samoan character. I know nothing about Samoan people. So like put in the work and learn the experiences and try to reflect that in your story. But also like, don't feel like you can't be yourself in what you're working on too. Like you really need to infuse yourself because that's what you're selling. You're selling your experience as well as what you think other experiences are from your own, like, you know, going out there and learning and experiencing different people's lives.
I think also for me, and I'm sure you feel this way too, if he is like not getting pigeonholed, like, so as a writer, you know, the show that I sold was about my trauma and like experience in the mental health care system, but I don't want to just be the trauma comedy writer. Right. I realized that a lot of people were hitting me up to like, you know, this is about mental health and this show is about mental health. And I'm like, that's great. I kind of just want to write a superhero show. You know, I kind of just, so the next thing that I'm doing right now is an animated property that like doesn't deal with hate crimes and doesn't deal with like, you know, it's kind of just like not saying that you can't do both. That's what I'm saying is like, don't, it's kind of like what you were saying, like know like your voice, but also know that that's not the only story that you can tell. And so I was just kind of tired of being the expert in drama. I'm like, but I also want to have joy and I want to see our characters having joy and being carefree and like just getting to go to an amusement park for the day or something and not have to worry about their parents being deported. And it's just like, so I would encourage people to find their voice, but also what are shows that bring you joy and watch those. And what I'm doing for my animated property is I had to sit down and watch what is out now. You know, it's not the same as when I was younger watching. I have a great animated background, but what are kids watching right now? So I'm not pitching something that's already out there. And just so I can know some of these conversations, like you were saying, the conversations they have on Craig of the Creek and on Steven Universe are way different than what they were allowed to have a decade or two ago on some of these shows. So things have elevated and our characters are even allowed to be even more fleshed out. And so I would encourage anyone trying to jump into animation to watch a lot of what is out right now. We did it.
We did it.
We did not talk about every show. I'm sorry. We will do a part two. I promise.
We never can talk about every show. And that's why we have episodes about shows. So this is about the journey to where what we've gotten from Cartoon Network. And if you have a show that you like, oh, I want to hear y'all talk about this, all I got to do is gently tweet us. We'll put it on the roster. Jeff, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter and on Instagram if you want to see drawings of me done by more talented people at Mr. Jeff Trammell, two M's, two L's. And I will also tweet about our show, our Emmy nominated show, Until You Win and Where You Can Watch It.
Ooh, all right. And me, you know, I'm always Iffy Whitey Way, Twitter, Instagram, If D's on Twitch. The Salt Squad grows every, you know, y'all have been there. You know, Jeff's been playing. If y'all think y'all can beat Jeff at Dragon Ball FighterZ, pull up. I'm going to let you know right now, you probably can. I know you.
Oh,
I know
really?
You good. Jeff is nice. Jeff is so nice that we had some dude come in from the chat and he was like, oh, is there a skill limit? And I was like, no, this boy came and watched us. And then he got Jeff once and then he was talking about how he'd be training and all this stuff. And then Jeff came back and beat him. So, Jeff is nice with it. so come with the heat. We're gonna get back to it. Everyone's been dying to have me do it again, and Zeno, voice of Hawks, said he wants in next time, so it'll be fun. You'll get to get washed by the creator of Craig's Creek and possibly the voice of Hawks. But you know, if you need to feel good, your boy out here, me, I'm still learning. Don't worry, I'm gonna get one of these Fiverr classes going, and then one day I'm just gonna come back like a big boy, and Jeff ain't gonna know what hit him. That's my new limit right now.
Danny,
where am I? I am at Ms. Danny Fernandez on all the things, and also Iffy and I both were on a show called The Great Debate,
yes,
which came out this week. So yes, check it out. It's on Sci-Fi. It's a bunch of nerds and comedians arguing about comedy nerd things. It's very funny. So I saw some people in the comments like, oh, you know, but I'm like, this is not a straight statistical, like, you know, in this season of Batman, he blah, blah, blah. It's nerdy comedy people being nerdy comedy people. So it's very entertaining. And watch it. It's on Sci-Fi. Check it out. Dropping every week for the next month.
Let's do it. All right. I guess that's all. So I guess we'll end it the way we normally end this and say
stay nerdy.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.